This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
Hey, it's Fitz, and if you don't know who I am, here's a quick bio. I'm a veteran sports journalist who writes, does TV, radio, and is a longtime podcaster. Also, I have stage 4 prostate cancer. During the initial stages of the 2020 pandemic, my doctors advised me to stay at home. But now, 2 years later, I'm not only healthy, but I've been declared in remission. But I'm still continuing this podcast, during which I'm calling the many friends, athletes, coaches, and colleagues who I've met throughout my 30 years in this industry. And now I'm also calling some new people to make some new friends. Oh, and I'm hitting the record button. Welcome to my life and the Life of Fitz podcast. Gene Taylor is now in his fifth year as Kansas State's director of athletics, and by all accounts, he's done a really good job as the boss in charge of the entire department at K-State. He inherited a department from John Curry that, while fiscally sound, the books look great, there were still a lot of underlying issues within the department. It was almost a hostile workplace, and coaches didn't feel supported by their AD. We're heading into the fifth year of Gene Taylor, and to say things are radically different because he was hired at K-State might be an understatement. Gene Taylor made his name as athletics director at North Dakota State, and then he went on to be the deputy senior AD at Iowa. And you start to see this Midwest flavor running through his career. And when he was hired at K-State, it was obvious he was a good fit for the Wildcat fan base. And the first big decision he faced following the retirement of Bill Snyder as football coach was who to hire. So when he hired Chris Kleiman, the coach at North Dakota State, with whom he had worked with in Fargo, some people thought it was a curious move. But as we now know, Chris Kleiman also is a great fit for Kansas State. Gene Taylor is one of the nicest guys in the business. And last year when the Big 12 about came apart at the seams, Taylor said, stay the course. This conference is fine. We're going to gather ourselves and be stronger than ever. And he was right. And now let's call Gene Taylor right here in Manhattan, Kansas.
What's up?
How are you, sir?
I'm good. How are you?
This could be an adventure trying to record a podcast with a storm going and two frightened dogs. So this is going to be an adventure.
Well, that's always makes it interesting that way.
Yeah, I know. I know. Working from home is different. It's different, but you always have a dog to mess things up for you. You can always blame the dog, too.
Exactly.
Well, sir, another athletic season is here. I don't know what happened, how the summer went that fast, but it did. Do you sense the same optimism from fans that I do?
I do. I mean, just, you know, whether it was the summer when we were doing our, you know, Cat Backer tours or just generally talking to folks, you know, they just feel that we're going to be pretty good. And I don't, you know, obviously coming off the LSU, I think that causes, you know, a lot of excitement after the way we beat LSU. But and then some of the new additions, and you know, there just seems to be a lot of energy right now behind our program.
Yeah, it hasn't been this way in a while, and it's kind of fun. And it's not just football, though. I mean, it just seems sports are trending, and we haven't seen anything, you know, on the court from Jerome Tang, but that hire certainly energized fans too.
Absolutely, yeah.
I'm really eager. I'm trying not to be overly optimistic about this football season, but here we are. Are you seeing a reflection in ticket sales right now that is kind of showing recovery from the pandemic season?
Yeah, we're tracking, you know, pretty close to 2019. That's kind of what we really, when we're comparing year over year, we're really more focused on 19 because that was the, you know, last non-COVID. And even though we had fans in 2021, we still felt 19 was a better gauge, and we're tracking pretty well against 19. We're not ahead by a long stretch, but we're pretty even right now.
How concerned were you coming out of COVID? I know a lot of people in the entertainment business, whether it's sports or theater or movies, were concerned that habits were broken, people wouldn't come back in the same numbers that they had been after having a good year of sitting at home and watching games on TV and realizing, hey, this isn't so bad. I'm actually impressed that people have come back in these kind of numbers.
I'm with you. You know, and we've not only talked about it just internally here, but, you know, with my colleagues, like you said, you get comfortable sitting at home. You watch a commercial and go grab a beer or a beverage, and you know, you miss the interaction with your friends and families and tailgating and all that. But I still think there was some pretty decent COVID hangover even last year. You know, we didn't see the sellouts and all that stuff, but I was nervous. I was thinking people were just going to get pretty comfortable with that aspect of sitting at home. And fortunately, they've come back, and they're even coming back more so this year.
Yeah, there's just so many revenue streams, but at the bottom line, the end of the day, you got to sell those tickets. You can have full suites and, you know, all those really nice things, but you got to sell the tickets, don't you?
Well, that from a revenue, but just from an atmosphere perspective, right, too, you know, and energy coming out of the tunnel for them, or walking down the, you know, walkway or whatever the case may be for the players. But, yeah, the energy and the atmosphere, I mean, that, you know, that's, you know, I know I had colleagues that in the Big Ten that when they had no fans, you know, I think the year we had, you know, minimum fans or 25%. I mean, it was dead, but imagine no fans. And so yeah, that energy is huge.
Let's go back 4 years ago or so when you made the decision to hire Chris. I've heard it described as the easy decision for Gene Taylor. Well, I think it was the hard decision to hire a friend. It's turned out pretty well, buddy, by the way. you seem to have chosen pretty well. But take us back to that. How difficult was that, or was it difficult to pick someone you knew so well and know that people would say, oh, he's just hiring his buddy from Fargo?
Yeah, it was very difficult. And I knew, and for those reasons, I mean, I knew who Chris was, not only as a coach and as a person, but we had some really good candidates, and it really came down to a couple of, you know, candidates that we thought pretty highly of through the interview process. Then I knew I was going to get that reaction, right? I knew that, you know, oh boy, FCS, that's a big jump. He doesn't, you know, he's hiring his buddy. So it was difficult in that sense. And I knew he was going to have to come in here and have a pretty big, you know, shoes to fill generally, but then just the overcome that negative, kind of that negative perception of me hiring my buddy. But I knew because of who he was, and as a person, and the way he coached, and what I've seen him as a coach, seen out of him as a coach, that it was going to ultimately turn out pretty well. But, you know, I knew when I was going to announce it, I was going to get blasted, which I did, and fortunately it's worked out. But so, yes, it was difficult in a sense, And yet it was easy because I knew who Chris was.
Well, it's interesting because now that I've gotten to know Chris, he's culturally, he's just a perfect fit. I mean, being an Iowa guy that coached all over the Midwest, and including that one school down the road, he just had a good feel for what the people were like. And, I mean, he's just been a comfortable fit, hasn't he?
Yeah, and I think that's a big thing. And that's what I was kind of looking for, not kind of, because, you know, there is a certain uniqueness, specialness about K-State. And we talk about it, you know, Bill talked about the people. And you had to, my opinion, I felt we had to have somebody that, you know, is not going to do exactly what Bill did, but fit culturally and make the changes necessary that a head coach might want to make. And I knew Chris had that kind of personality. I mean, he replaced a very popular, successful coach in Craig Bohl at North Dakota State and made his own mark, so to speak. And, you know, I knew he'd come in and respect Coach Snyder at a high level. Yet still, you know, come in and put his own mark and do it in his way and do it, you know, gracefully. And he's done that. And, you know, now he, you know, has got his, you know, almost his full culture of players in the locker room. And, you know, that's, I think, what I hope will work out in the long run. But I think fit is a huge deal, and some people don't pay much attention to that when they go and hire their next coach. And I thought it was really, really important here because of who he was replacing.
Yeah, I agree. I've only really covered one school in my time, but I do feel like being the right type of person is so important to the fan base. You just got to be able to connect. And I think we've seen it not work in the past. I know long before you came here, there was a hiring of a basketball coach, Tom Asbury, that, you know, they kind of won the lottery for getting the best candidate. They beat out Iowa State and they had to settle on Tim Floyd. And it's funny how those things work out, because culturally it wasn't a good fit at all. And I think K-Staters learned a lesson from that. And it's really important here. You got to feel like you're part of the family and want to be part of the family, which I think your hires have done. And that's a congratulations to you.
Well, thank you.
Chris, though, has not been as different from Bill Snyder as I thought he would be. Now, I know that sounds weird because their styles are so different, but we're not getting much injury information. And the practices, we see little glimpses, but lots of stretching. It is interesting, though, that even though they go about things differently, when you back up and look at how the program operates, with, you know, they've got their core values, like his goals, they've got so many of the things, just feel like the framework of K-State football didn't change at all, just kind of the outwardly appearances. Am I wrong in that?
Yes and no. I mean, obviously, I think, you know, Chris will share a little bit more at press conferences and about the team itself. I know he does, you know, on the Catbacker tours. You know, Bill would sometimes go on Catbacker tours and just talk about everything but football, you know. But, yeah, I think I don't know if it's just because that's how coaches are these days and limited access from the media. There are definitely some similarities in terms of, you know, keeping things close to the vest, but I do think he's a little more open than Coach Snyder was. But I think that's just coaches anymore. There's so much out there social media wise, and they want to protect whether it's a game plan or they're so afraid something's going to get out there. I get that in some cases. I mean, some cases I don't, because half of us watch what they're doing out there and have no idea really what they're working on. But, you know.
Yeah, I agree with that. And as it turns out, replacing the legend wasn't probably the toughest thing Chris Klieman's had to face. There's just such a seismic shift in college athletics right now. And, Chris, year two, you're going to have a pandemic that'll basically shut down the entire world. And then let me tell you about the transfer portal. And I don't know if you know what the NIL is, but you're going to find out. I mean, it's incredible what coaches are having to navigate right now.
Yeah, no question. I mean, I think about that. Obviously, that was number one is, oh, boy, I've got to come in here and replace a guy that, you know, greatest turnaround in college football. in Bill Snyder with his name on the stadium and a statue and all those kind of things. And quickly it turned into, you know, a lot more than that. And it started with the pandemic, obviously, with the social injustice stuff. And now you got the transfer portal. And so not only do you have to make the adjustment, and there was an adjustment coming from FCS to here. You know, yeah, it's still football, but there's just some things that you have to adjust to. And then all of a sudden you're thrown into the, you know, the pandemic, transfer portal, name, image, and likeness that all coaches are dealing with. But all of that came boom, 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 boom for a new coach at this level. And I think he's handled it very well.
Is there something else looming out there? I know there's a lot of discussion about athletic departments paying student athletes directly more than what they can now. I mean, it just continues to evolve. And while it's great for the student athletes, I'm not sure it's always great. It's like, you know, give a guy $1 million and it might cause a mess. You know what I mean?
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, that's what I think, you know, we've talked about as colleagues and ADs. I mean, you know, when you look at what the Big Ten just came out with yesterday on the amount of money that they're going to be paid for their TV rights, if we expand college football playoffs, which I think we will, and there's going to be more money there, you know, at what point does revenue sharing, you know, as much as I hate to say that, become a discussion? And, you know, it's, you know, it's, there's things that, you know, there's a lot of things right now are out of coaches' control, you know. And the other thing we talked about is, you know, professional athletes that get paid a lot of money don't do a very good job of managing that. And what about the kid who, coming out of high school, if some of these numbers are true, and apparently some are, you know, are they really going to be committed to work as hard as they need to work, you know, to be able to play? We know how many five stars haven't panned out yet. Some of these five stars are getting significant NIL deals. That's what they're called, but they're not really. They're recruiting inducements and tampering and whatever else there is out there. Are they going to manage it as an 18-year-old kid? And I don't know. I mean, I you know, all of a sudden a kid goes, coach, I'm not going to come to lift today. Well, okay. And he's living in a beautiful apartment because he can afford it and driving a fancy car. And, you know, I don't know. I mean, that's a lot to put on these young people that have never stepped foot in a competitive arena. And they're going to be guys on that team. They're going to be trying to take their job. And how are they going to be able to manage it? And are they going to say, no, I'm going to transfer. And then what is that donor? What are they going to do? Or whoever's helping them with the money. I mean, it's, there's a lot of things that aren't good about it right now, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. It's going to blow up a lot of locker rooms. And and through the years, I've discovered that the most cohesive locker rooms are often the better teams. You got to have some talent there, but you can overcome more talent if you're all pulling the same direction. And I think the NIL will absolutely blow up locker rooms. I think it's going to be a mess for some of these programs.
I agree.
You brought that up, that so much is changing in society and these kids have to navigate this. I don't know how the kids are doing it. I don't. I mean, I'm overwhelmed by all the social media, everything that goes on. You know me, I'm not shy about getting into it on social media. But still, it's just kind of a constant barrage of your senses, whether it's, you know, videos or interactions on Twitter. And now you've got people in your ear about money. Man, I know it seems cliche, but I don't know if student athletes have ever had it more difficult than they have it right now, even though they might get paid.
I'm with you. And then add one more level on that is gambling, legalized sports betting.
Yeah.
That's going to be, people are going to be sitting in the stands on their phones.
Yep.
Making, you know, now I think our Kansas law does now allow for the prop bets or the, you know, but all of a sudden the kid, it makes a, you know, bad pass and the fans are booing him because it just cost them, you know, $100. I mean, that scares the heck out of me, you know. So I don't know. I mean, you're right. I think just go back before NIL and before anything else, a lot of these athletes had pressures on them with the social media and the access to them that they never had before. You know, used to they have to pick up a paper, read an editorial about themselves, and now they, you know, it's just constant barrage. And now you add in the NIL and kids making these kind of dollars, it's hard. And yeah, I think they're facing stuff that athletes haven't faced in many, many years.
I'm going to put you on the spot here. Did the NCAA screw up how they handled the NIL by kind of just ignoring it and sitting in the corner and saying, well, we lost a court case, have fun, guys, because they didn't give any guidance, and now they're trying to backtrack and make sure people understand this can't be used for recruiting. Man, the horses are out of the barn. The horses are long gone on that one.
Yes, I will tell you that we had guardrails written and legislation ready to go. And the NSA, the folks in Indianapolis and the lawyers said, if you do that, we're going to face antitrust. So you can't pass that legislation. If we would have passed it, we would have had things that would have at least kept it somewhat in a box better than it is today. And now we're trying to put the toothpaste back in the tube, so to speak. And it was written. Many things, very clear language about recruiting inducement and tampering and how the person was going to have to, very clear language back in July, whenever it was. And we were ready to hit send, and the lawyer said no. And now we are where we are. And as some folks said, we're going to face antitrust lawsuits anyway, so let's at least pass them and, you know, and deal with it when it comes. But yeah, now I don't know how we get it back in. They sent out a letter yesterday. I don't know if you saw that, about, you know, asking schools to participate in, you know, please give us information so we can find these bad actors. But we've not handled it very well at all, unfortunately.
Why would schools do that? I hate to be pessimistic about it, but basically there's no incentive other than doing the right thing to turn in your own booster that might be paying players. If a school's prone to cheating, that ain't going to happen. They're not going to turn anyone in.
I think what they're hoping that is other schools will step up and say, hey, this is what I heard at this school, and this is what I know. Our recruit that signed for us told us that they got offered this. And I think it seems like kind of a interesting letter to put out.
But. Yeah, without any investigative resources, subpoenas, and that kind of thing. These are now private contracts between individuals that you can argue the NCAA doesn't have any power to see, but I don't know how they're going to handle it. I just think, we're facing a period, as you well know, that we're going to have to just reinvent the NCAA and start over, because you can't just keep passing rules and then really not do anything. Don't apply the – you're just rewarding the cheaters over and over that get away with stuff, because there's no sizable penalty. It's worth the risk.
Yeah. And I agree. I think if these – well, you know, look at the Miami situation. Obviously, that guy is about as out there publicly on some of the stuff he's done. And if they don't hammer Miami, then – what's going to stop anybody else? Because he's very vocal. I mean, he said, come sue me, come find out. You can't touch me kind of thing. And so we'll see. Yeah.
It's amazing how when things happen, there's always the oddity that somehow involves Kansas State. There's always a Kansas State rule. And now with Nigel going to Miami, we find ourselves right in the middle of this one too. It's absolutely incredible through the history of college athletics. How many things, pregame dunking, tip-ins, not being shots, just on and on with the K-State rule with the bowl situation. When you go from third in the nation to the fourth or fifth best bowl in the conference, those kind of things. It's just so many K-State rules, Gene. It's part of the culture here.
That's funny. I guess I didn't realize some of that stuff. That's funny.
Yeah. The Darryl Winston one, where he tipped the ball in and was fouled in the NCAA tournament, but back then it wasn't a shot, so they waved off the basket. And
no way.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
Yeah, that's, that's one of them. And of course, poor Brian Ruhletter dunked in the pregame and yeah. got the tee, which was never, ever done, but it happened to K-State.
It did to us.
It's just it's so typical. It's part of the culture. Hey, it's Fitz. Let's hit the pause button right here and take a little break.
Did you know that parents rank financial literacy as the number one most difficult life skill to teach? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app for families. With Greenlight, you send instant money transfers, set up chores, automate allowance, and keep an eye on your kids' spending with real-time notifications. Kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. And parents can rest easy knowing their kids are learning about money with guardrails in place. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Well, let's shift gears now to the elephant in the room, and that is that conference realignment. And, you know, you brought up a little bit ago the Big Ten contract. I can't wrap my mind around it. I don't see how paying $350 million essentially for a game of the week in a college conference, how that financially works out for the entity, but that's great for the conference. We'll see how it all pans out. It's only a 7-year contract, so at least all the parties were recognizing that we're not in this too far, I guess. But $1 billion a year, Gene, for TV rights, and they might still have another step to go in that. It's unbelievable. It's absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we've been hearing that it was headed that direction. Apparently, obviously, still, live TV is very valuable. Mm-hmm. And it's not just, you know, the Big Ten. I mean, some of these other leagues have signed new deals. And, you know, hopefully that bodes well for us as a conference when we get a chance to, you know, begin our negotiations, whether it's just as the conference that we are, or that we, you know, if there's more expansion coming, you know, the Big Ten thing is written in a way that apparently if they add more schools, you know, it doesn't detract from the ones they have. It just adds to it. So that says, I think, sends a little bit of a message that they wrote that in there for a reason. And whether the Big Ten will continue to expand or not anytime soon, but at least they're thinking about that the way they wrote the agreement. Will we get those kind of dollars? I don't know, but hopefully we can be at least somewhat competitive and get, you know, at least more than we're getting now. That's Commissioner Yormark's plan, is to, you know, add value to. But those are big numbers, and I jokingly sent an email to, or a text message to my friend Gary at Iowa yesterday and said, hey, can you give us a little bit of a loan for us poor folks here? He wrote back, he said, too late. You're far back in the line from everybody else, coaches, staff, university, faculty. So, I think those are some things that you get those kind of dollars. It's going to be really interesting how much that's going to have to be shared, maybe even across campus.
Yeah, we've seen over and over that money doesn't make you superior in college athletics. We've got a perfect example in our own conference.
Yeah,
but it's better to have the money than not. Still, it brings up issues. It just kind of bloats everything. I go back to when we lost Scotty Hazleton to Michigan State. Great football coach, great hire by Michigan State, but they paid him an amount that we just fiscally are not going to do that, at least at this point of, in the evolution. And the reality is that it didn't make Scotty a better coach. It just meant that he's getting paid a lot more. And as far as I can tell, Michigan State's not a better football program than Kansas State. It happens over and over. And spending money does not improve things. You know, it's just putting more money into something doesn't make it better. And I think a lot of these athletic departments, bluntly, that these guys aren't business people and they overspend their budget by 10% no matter what they do. And I do appreciate that you and John before you have been so fiscally responsible of staying inside of a budget, now not taking money from the university, which is remarkable, and even paying back some money to the university. It's incredible. K-State should be proud of how they operate their athletic department, and it's congratulations to you.
Well, thanks. And like I said, it started before me, obviously, and you were very efficient. I say we do a lot more with less. I think there's somewhat of a sense of pride there, but, you know, we're finding hard to, you know, keep staff because, you know, School X can pay them $20,000, $30,000 more. That worries me a little bit is some of these schools with this money will just build their staffs larger. And not talking coaching staffs, I'm just talking marketing and media relations and ops folks, and they're going to pay them more. And then, you know, we're going to have to do everything we can to, you know, keep staff. So that's why I said if we get a new TV deal and it can, you know, bring, I don't know, $15-20 more million dollars a year, which is still a lot of money, we can invest it back into our salaries mm-hmm. of our, you know, entry level positions and keep staff here a little bit longer. And then if, you know, somebody does come knocking on Chris's door, Jerome's door, whoever, we can try to be a little competitive with those extra dollars. But we still have to be efficient. We still have to manage it the right way. And but yeah, I worry that the Big Ten right now, you know, and then hopefully, like I said, if we got a better TV deal and then we expand football, then we can stay competitive with the Big Ten, even though they're making $100 million. You know what I mean? But we can't go backwards. That's for darn sure.
Yeah,
and that's Brett's goal, right? He gets it. And but clearly, live television content is apparently worth a lot of money to these networks. I mean, think about this. CBS only offered the SEC $280 million, and yet they're paying the Big Ten $350. They walked away from the SEC. Now, who the heck thought that was a good idea?
Yeah, this doesn't make any sense. I think maybe the growth of the value is even catching the TV executives off guard this competitive when they see everyone enter the market. You know, they probably at the time they thought ESPN was overpaying, but then they get into the Big Ten negotiations and realize, no, we were underpaying this. Yeah. If we don't step up, we're going to lose out here. It's shocking to me, the numbers, but I'm a perfect example. I don't watch live TV except for sports and news. If something big's happening, I'll turn on the news live. Yeah. But even if I'm watching a news program, I'm typically doing it off the DVR and skipping the ads and but don't do that when you're watching live, and it is effective advertising. I know that.
Yeah.
What is the timetable for the Big 12's media rights when you guys want to start really fleshing out where you're at with this, or is it ongoing?
Well, Bob kind of tried to get them to go early, but there were so many things going on that, you know, we had just taken on those four teams and they were deep in the negotiation with the Big Ten, and they basically said, no, thanks right now. You know, obviously, I think based on contract, then I don't know, you know, I'm not seeing the details, but I think we can start the only, unless they agree to go early, when I say they, Fox, ESPN, whoever, we can officially start negotiating in 2024. You know, you know, the Big Ten is settled, you know, were they willing to start that process earlier? I don't know. That's something for Brett to figure out. But I think as we sat in meetings before all this, Bob used to talk about we would go to the table in 2024.
Well, I think that's good. As odd as that is, I think not being in that fire right now is probably good for the conference, because the Pac-12s, you know, they've gone through the trauma of losing schools, which we know all too well at this conference. But they come out of that within weeks, and they're into a media negotiation at their weakest point. I think they needed time to heal, and they moved up their schedule, and I don't know if it was a good move. I'm fascinated by how that conference is not quite as aligned as what we saw the Big 12 a year ago.
Yeah, it may not be for them. I don't know. We'll see. And it just kind of depends. There are so many parts to the equation for us right now. Is how long do Texas and Oklahoma stay? And is that tied in to, you know, does ESPN want them to leave earlier for the SEC dollars? And would that help us with the negotiation with ESPN? And do they stay all the way through 23, 24, 25? And I mean, I think, and then is the Big Ten going to expand anymore, or any of the Pac-12 schools going to get nervous? And there's so many layers right now. I think it's just, it's a big chess game. And, you know, Brett's got to kind of lead us through that, and we'll see what happens.
It's kind of fun not being at the center of that chess game for once.
Yeah, no question. I mean, I think we're as solid as we have been in a while, and I hope that stays. Hope that stays that way, for sure.
I've explained to people that I think the outsiders, particularly, I'm seeing it from certain media elements that cover the Pac-12, see what the Big 12's lost over the years and sees it as an overall sign of weakness of the conference. I look at it more like you've gone through two waves of trauma and you've healed both times.
Right.
And because of that, you're stronger. You have a better understanding of who you are. I feel like this conference somehow, even though now it's going to be down half of its original members, has a better sense of identity than ever. That underdog spirit we just talked about with K-State kind of runs through this entire conference at this point, where we don't back down because your TV contract's bigger, or maybe your market share is bigger, or your brand is bigger. That's not what schools like, you know, I talk about the spinal column of the Big 12, Iowa State, Kansas State, Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, that agricultural engineering spirit that you just forge forward and get it done. And I think the Big 12 is really salty right now.
I would agree with that. And I sat in some meetings and listened to some ADs, and they are salty right now. And they're, you know, very proud of the fact that we have been able to stick together, and we've got a little bit of a chip on our shoulder and say, you know what, you know, last year Baylor and Oklahoma State played the championship game, and it was one of the most watched championship games of last year. And we've got some really good teams in this league, even though two of our brethren are leaving, and it's not always either one of those. So I think there's a source of pride. I think there's a little bit of a chip on our shoulder, and like you said, I think it's just this who we are as an institution or institutions. That, you know, say, you know what, the heck with you guys. We're going to go out and still be good and be competitive, and we have a lot to prove. And I think in listening to the conversations, Brett's buying into that and pumping us up because of it, too.
Look, I recognize the importance of brand identity, and as I've mentioned so many times, so many of these college football brands were set – you know, coming out of World War II. And,
right.
You know, they've just been ingrained in us. I mean, we're roughly the same age. And, you know, we grew up watching USC, UCLA, and, you know, Nebraska, Oklahoma, and Auburn, Alabama, and Ohio State, Michigan. Yeah, those games were always on. And that's what we watched, and there wasn't as much college football. And so I recognize the value of brands. But also, I think it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. If you put a program on, you know, the main Fox or CBS or NBC or ABC over and over, while other schools are playing on ESPN2, well, of course they're going to get better ratings. I mean, there's no doubt about it. If they're on a bigger platform, they're going to get better ratings. And I felt like the Big 12 championship game showed, hey, you take these two leftovers, is, you know, how some people view what's left in the Big 12. You put them on the stage, you put them on the network, and you play exciting football. Look, people watch. Yeah. People want to watch good football. They don't want to watch the brands as much as good football.
Yeah, no, I agree. And you know, when was the last time UCLA or USC played in a national championship game? And, they get pretty uniforms. But you're right. I think that's how they got built, was because we're growing up. You had three channels, and one carried, maybe two carried college football, and you always watched the same team over and over. And that's not the case anymore. And teams have been successful. Now, obviously, the SEC, based on, you know, who's made it to the championship game, but, you know, you get it. That's why I think expanding will be huge, because it won't ever be, I should never say never, but, I mean, it's not going to be like the college basketball, but you put 16 or 12, whatever that number is going to be that it expands to, it's a little different ballgame. And ultimately, the cream will rise to the top. But there's going to be some really good teams, and there's really good games, and somebody's going to beat somebody that you wouldn't see coming. And the good news is, and I've talked a little bit about this, now that I've had, you know, 1 year under my belt on the CFP selection committee, you know, you get towards the end, and you're really only talking four, five, six teams, not four, some probably six teams the last couple of weeks. That's all anybody's focused on. If you go to 12, you're talking 20, 25 teams that have a chance to make that 12-team mm-hmm. field. And that brings a lot of excitement to a lot of fan bases. And that's just going to do nothing but help college football.
Oh, I agree. That'll be incredible. And just the fact that, you know, you make the field of 12. You know, in the past, you might have played in a good bowl game, but mm-hmm. it's now become about those four schools. Who makes it? And everyone else is everyone else. And if you expand it to 12, a lot of people will have good feelings about their football program that might have felt disappointed they didn't make the four, if that makes sense. There seems to be this vision right now between the warring media entities that, you know, the Big Ten SEC is going to be the AFC NFC. Is that just a complete miscalculation of college sports? I mean, I just feel like no matter what is going on in the SEC, K-State fans are going to watch K-State and Oklahoma State and the teams that are in their league and their universe.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't think we're going to be the two conference, you know, 30 teams in each conference or whatever the number is. I just don't see that happening. You may have – you know, you may have four. Who knows? But if the Pac-12 stays strong, and even if they lose a couple, then they pick up a couple like we did. I think there is value in some diversity and some regionality and regional, you know, rivalries. And then think about this, is how do you really, if you have a 16 to 18, 20 team conference, I mean, how do you really determine who's your best two teams out of that? Because you're not going to ever play everybody, you know. I mean, obviously the Big Tens have been at 14, now they're going to be at 16, and, you know, they'll figure it out. They're not going to go to divisional play, apparently, and, you know, that's something obviously we're talking about in the Big 12, but I think you lose a little bit by that, but I still think you're going to have – I don't think you're going to have two conferences and 35 teams in each conference or whatever the number is. I really don't.
Well, I think 16 is the most you can really go and be, quote, a conference. I mean, using scheduling pods, you can play everyone home and away every 6 years in a six-year window and still be in touch with everyone in your conference, although the SEC managed to really screw that up with how they scheduled in their situation. But you go to 20, look, you're two 10-team conferences, or, you know, if you're 24, maybe you're three 8-team conferences. You're just not going to play everyone every 10 years. And it's, that's not a conference to me, Gene. That's just a, that's a scheduling collective.
Yeah.
I don't get why you want to go into 20 or 24 or even higher. It just doesn't make sense to me. There's no purpose of it.
Yeah. Well, it's money, you know, it's, mm-hmm. it's money driven and, you know, that's that ultimately that's what it is. I mean, I think the UCLA AD said it when they, you know, agreed to join the Big Ten. They're $100 million in debt and they need to pay the bills. And I'm like, well, you're going to send your kids to Rutgers and back. Good luck with that. But man, we're kind of, you know, got to be careful because we got BYU to Central Florida. So, you know, but yeah, it's just kind of where we're heading right now.
Should this conference go to 16?
The Big 12? I don't know. We have to. I think if we can add the right number, whether it's two or four, and it enhances our TV package because of, you know, the regionality of it or the markets, then yeah, I think we do. But you know, if all it does is split the pie that we currently have 16 ways instead of 12 ways, no.
Yeah.
That doesn't make any, that's, I think Brett talked about that at the media days, is value added and we're not going to detract, we're going to add. So it has to make sense. And it has to, you know, I would say regionally, that doesn't matter anymore because we're already in a couple of three time zones. But I do think we should do it only if it adds value and allows our TV partners to say, okay, yeah, you guys are worth X much more than you were before, then we should do it.
Yeah, I can't believe how we've seen conferences blow up and there was regional sense to everything and now it just is nonsense. But yeah. Is there something, I don't know what the word I want to use here, empowering if the Big 12 ends up having schools in all four time zones and being able to fill all four windows on a Saturday afternoon, morning, evening, you know, for media entities? It seems to me that would be an advantage this conference could exercise over others.
Well, I think that's what I mean, I don't know that. I don't talk to TV execs, but as I read some of these articles and some of the stuff that's written about the, you know, the Big Ten and why they took the UCLA USC thing, is there is a little bit of that, is that, you know, TV partners want to be able to fill all time zones or all, you know, time slots and still be able to get a, you know, good game, you know, on that, you know, the nights that I'm done here and I'm sitting at home watching, you know, Mountain West or Pac-12 game, having a cold beer. They want that. They want that live content until from 11 in the morning until, you know, 10 o'clock at night. And I guess that's important to them. It's important to their advertisers, is how I read some of these articles.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I think the average fan didn't really think in these terms, but now with all this stuff out there about media rights, they're beginning to realize how the media entities are thinking. It's just a little bit scary in itself. Well, Gene, I appreciate it so much. By the way, this is probably the hardest hitting question I've asked you. When you pop that cold beer at home, what brand is it typically for Gene Taylor?
I think everybody knows the answer to this, but it's Bud Light. That's been my staple for a while. I used to be something else, but they started delivering Budweiser products to my house when I lived in Fargo, so I quickly became a Bud Light guy. And I don't quite get that delivery service here, but I'm still that's my cold beverage of choice.
Oh my! Based on the culture, I think it would have been another Bud product that I might have picked for you, but.
The Bush.
Yeah.
Well, see, I learned that there are some farmers that don't like Bud Light, particularly because they don't use corn. I think that's I heard that the other day for the first time. I'm like, huh. But we do have Bush in my house too. Bush Light in my house too. Yeah.
Well, being multicultural, I'm a Mexican beer guy.
Okay.
There you go. I'm kind of, you know, the Carlos O'Kelly's, the Irish Mexican. So
I make a mean margarita too, is what I've been told. So
Nobody wants me drinking tequila. Nobody.
Yeah.
Gene, I appreciate it. You got a lot on your plate, and it was good catching up. And I will. I'm heading out to catch the end of a practice and do some interviews. And I do appreciate that about Chris. Lots of access here in fall camp, and I know the fans love it.
All right, man. Talk to you later.
Okay, buddy.
See ya.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Bye bye.
I honestly don't know how much you learned from that podcast, but I think you got a good feel for what an enjoyable guy Gene is. He's one of those guys that has to put on the face of leadership, but he'd rather kind of just sit around and have a beer with you and talk about sports. Gene Taylor's a really good man, and Kansas State is lucky to have him. Well, that's it for the third season of Life of Fitz. This one was kind of short this year, but I tell you what, we're going to continue doing these into the future because I really love having these conversations. And I also love the ability to remind men, if you're 45 and over, go to the doctor and get your PSA scored. It saved my life. The prostate-specific antigen score is the most reliable test for early indication of prostate health problems, including prostate cancer. Guys, don't mess around. We've lost so many men way before they should go because they did not go to the doctor. Take care, everyone. Make sure you go check out everything we're doing at GoPowerCat.com because this, with Gene Taylor in charge, is going to be a fun K-State sports season. I'll talk to you again real soon.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.